Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It is March 4, 2022, and you're listening live to Fright Talk right here on Everyday Folks. I am Billy B.J. Jones, and I'm here with my brother,
Nadeem Tapsch.
And we're the Fright Talk guys. We're back, and we're ready. We're ready for 2022. We are already in the third month of the year, and we have some exciting stuff. We're just getting started. And anytime you'd like to speak to us during this live podcast, you can call us at 347-539-5372. Again, that is 347-539-5372. And you may inbox us with your questions, comments, or requests at everydayfolkslisten@gmail.com, frighttalkguys@gmail.com, or on the Dean's Instagrams, frighttalkguys for us, or NTABSCH, N-T-A-B-S-C-H. And we also want to say thank you for supporting us as we truly break into a full year, too, of this Fright Talk series. We're growing and learning along with you. We appreciate your questions and comments well in advance before this show and even after. So keep the love coming. Nadeem, how are you doing? It's welcome back, by the way.
Thank you. I am doing well. Tired, as we all are, but I'm doing well. I'm excited for our show today. I know that we have had a great response of people reaching out to us for today's show. So I'm really excited about it. And I think, you know, Billy, I think that the last couple of shows we've been tackling certain topics that otherwise don't really get talked about. And I like that, especially in the horror genre. I really like that. And so I'm very much looking forward to today's show. I am well. I'm doing. And just I'm glad to be here with you. So how are you doing before we get into this wonderful, wonderful setup we have for them today?
Super excited. There's so much to talk about and so much potential for what's to come. Do you agree? Like,
yes.
2022 is shaping up to be an unforgettable year of different proportions in comparison to the previous 2 years. So as crazy as it's been and as intense as it's been, I'm still optimistic that this is a good year. So thank you for asking. And listeners, today, in celebration of the 2022 Women's History Month, we, the Fright Talk guys, pay tribute to women who are directors and producers. We want you to learn more about the incredible women who have paved the way in horror. So, you know, Nadeem, it's fun. It's always exciting when we pick topics, and then when we think we know a topic or we know a particular angle on it, we do our research, we learn something new. We're like, wow, there's so many cool things to unpack here. And kudos to all women across not only America, but across the world. Whether they are here or they're struggling in the challenges that are taking place over in Russia and the like, we have women doing incredible work on the front line and the behind the scenes, creatively, professionally, as a mother. There's so much to be grateful for. So in the spirit of Women's History Month, this is for all the incredible ladies out there.
That is so well said, Billy. And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned. Listen, folks, our hearts, Billy and I's hearts, are with the people of Ukraine during this very difficult time for them. We always keep them in our thoughts, and we celebrate their courageousness and through something horrific that they are going through. So we definitely support our human brothers and sisters in Ukraine. So thank you for that.
You know, the women of the female, it's interesting. Before we start, folks, we have to also make sure we make this clear. Women directors can sometimes also be producers, especially if they're working in the indie lane But many, and there are so many indie film directors of all colors and genders and identities that are emanating today, courtesy of Netflix, courtesy of other independent platforms that are giving other creative voices who are not in Hollywood, who are now competing at the same level of Hollywood. But what I did not know is that there were some amazing women for the past 30 and 40 years, 50 years, folks, who really made such a dramatic impact on horror in ways that I did not even recognize. And one of my favorite movies, which I thought was so cool, that I didn't even know was even happening, was Mary Harron. Mary Harron directed American Psycho. And those of you who saw the flyer when it went out for our promo show, it's one of the most striking, a lot of folks, you know, this Christian Bale's face, and also all of his American good boy looks and charm. I was shocked to realize that a woman created that story. That a woman created that storyline. I don't know if you were, Nadine, but I was shocked a woman created it.
I know, and we know, that there is a ton of iconic male movie, horror movie directors, producers, and writers. But even still with that, Lily, why is it that we, and I say we because I'm part of that we, why is it that we or people in general automatically assume that when a horror movie comes out, it's male directed or male produced? I don't know why that connection, it's almost like if people think it's automatic, right? Mm-hmm. And there's that, mm-hmm. that's, it's going to be a male producer. Oh, was this Wes Craven? Was this, you know,
right.
Stephen King? Was this, you know? So I don't know. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because they've dominated the industry for so long?
Yes, absolutely. They dominated the industry for so long. And I also say it depends on the point of view of which the story is given. So if you take American Psycho, for instance, where you have this upscale, handsome, attractive, almost like Ted Bundy-like gentleman, which plays off of that idea, now that I think about it. And he does these very sadistic things to women and lures them to his place. It's, you know, in the modern times, it's a combination of Psycho meets 50 Shades of Grey, meets all these other tropes that we are, at least identities that we see in film that we now can survey. I think what happens is the fact that women were so, you know, subjugated or victimized in the show, why is it that I feel almost like conditioned that a woman could not do such another thing to another woman when it shouldn't even be about that, right? But she, it's almost like the director, Mary Harron put such power in Christian's role in such a phenomenal way.
Yeah.
And it made it almost like, it's scary because it wasn't in a Victorian house this time. This happened in a very contemporary, upscale world where
metropolitan
where people live and thrive. So I guess because it was a male and it was male driven and male victimizing, as many slashers do, taking advantage of females and other underrepresented communities, it just automatically in my head, it was a man who made it. Of course he would have influenced this because it was a man.
Right. No, I think that's an excellent point. I know that in the movie, which is not really horror, but let's say it's a thriller. Do you recall the movie Single White Female?
I do.
All right. And that in that movie, it pitted woman against woman.
That's
right?
True. Yep.
In the movie itself, it pitted woman against woman. And so, you know, we have so many great horror, not just movies, but shows that we get a tribute to women directors, producers, and writers. You know, a lot of times we see a finished product and we forget all the work that goes in behind the scenes to get that product out there and to get that product created. And so I think it's fantastic that we're celebrating. And besides celebrating the women's accomplishments in horror, I think it's also hopefully going to give insight to our audience of, oh, wow, I didn't know that a woman directed or produced or wrote this. And maybe people will look at those shows and those movies they saw again, and I don't know if it'll change their perspective or not on how much they enjoyed the plot of the movie, of whether or not, wow, this plot was, if it pitted a woman against woman or man against what man or whatever the case is.
And you remind me of Fran Rubel. and I'm going to say this. I know this is one of Nadine's favorite shows that used to come on UP on WN or WB, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But before
yep.
it was a show, there Rubel created Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie in 92, which
yeah.
is definitely much different. I guess it's more comedy, whereas Buffy on TV was more dark. It was darker, I guess. So the point here is this, that she created this storyline that created this pulp icon.
Yes.
You know, that was very empowering. She was cute. She was attractive. You know, even Sarah Michelle Gellar, who really iconized the role or canonized,
yeah.
you know, the role, she really gives, you know, this identity and attributes a lot of her success to that initial, you know, showing of that movie. And the funny thing is, when you think about it, I mean, the plot isn't that hard. It isn't that dense.
Right. Right.
But it worked.
It worked. What was it? Her last name was Kuzu, wasn't it? Fran?
Yeah.
Something Kuzu? Yeah.
Kuzi. Yeah, Rubel Kuzi, yeah.
Rubel Kuzi. Kuzi, that's what it was.
Kuzi, yeah, something like that.
You know, first of all, I think that there was a time in the 90s where when you wanted a horror show, that was the only thing that was on the air. And that was the only thing even close to horror. And then what was great about it is that, and yes, you look back at it, you're like, man, that's so campy, right? But it wasn't just about vampires. You know, the show also tackled demons and werewolves and stuff, which I found it interesting. I think though looking back now, it's campy. I think at the time, I think it was almost needed. You know, I think people got tired of watching, here's a throwback, Dawson's Creek or anything like that. And people wanted something just a little bit darker.
That's a very good point. Very good point. And Lambert's initial, I have to tell you, I like the book better than the movie, but I appreciate the older version of the movie. And that was Lambert's Pet Sematary, you know, where she directed it in 1989. It was an amazing story that I think more folks begin to read the book after having seen the movie. And that's
right.
how I actually came across it, because I was a King avid fan before, you know, the silver screen, you know, exposure at the magnitude that we see it. And so as a result, her role in that, Lambert has done so many things. But what I didn't realize is when I was doing my research, I didn't know she had also directed videos for other people like Janet Jackson, Madonna, Sting, the Go-Go's. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, hold on. So you had a successful career as a music director in the 80s, and then you made horror. But then why not? Because music and horror go hand in hand. So I thought
right,
it was super
yeah,
cool to know
do.
That aspect about her.
They do. And you know, there's a lot of, I don't know if the term indie would be correct. There's a lot of female horror writers, directors, producers, creatives that just because you haven't heard of them yet in mainstream does not mean that they're not doing their thing. The sisters, what is it called? Twisted Sisters, the ones, Jen and Sylvia Soska, they are horror films creators, and they created American Mary, and they also had that reality show where it was like a haunted elevator type of thing, and you have to go out and do challenges. And so they've done their own thing, and they're kind of indie, but I think things like that are fantastic for horror, and I think you're right. I think a lot of times some great people kind of get overlooked, or we put them in this box and say, okay, they only did horror when, like you said, they've worked with so many other people and done so many other things in various industries.
And let me say, it's also becoming more diverse, because you have Nia DaCosta, who produced the modern version, the remake of Candyman. And
yes.
I thought it was super cool that everyone is definitely, when you think of horror today, and if you're African-American, Peel is that name, right? Which is also so cool, because as we shared in previous episodes, he was known for his comedy and for that aspect or genre of his work. And here, a lot of folks get surprised, like, oh my gosh, now he's into horror. Where did that come from? I'm like, wait a minute. There are quite a few folks who are into horror and don't realize it. I'll give you an example. Nadine, when I interviewed just a couple days ago on BJ Speaks, I interviewed Coach Susan Summons, Professor Susan Summons, 5-6-time World Time Hall of Famer. She loves horror. In fact, she said she wanted to say to us, to you especially, great job on the last two episodes. She went on and on and on before our show, the episode went live. She was going on and on and on about horror. She said, a lot of people are shocked about to know that about me, that I actually love a scary movie, but I absolutely love them. And that's where it is. I think what's happening today is that when you get more women and more diversity in the game, more folks are not going to come out as, you know, not see it as taboo. It's just going to be recognized equally on a level of understanding. It might not be everybody's taste, but it's definitely an opportunity, a pleasure. And so I think that's, it's nice to see as we do this, the folks that we think we know now are emerging or revealing themselves. I like coming out of the horror closet, you know?
Right.
In that regard, but kudos to Dia DaCosta and good job for her for being able to break a name for herself in that regard.
Yeah, and I, you know, we've talked about this in previous episodes. Sometimes people low-key enjoy horror, but I guess they don't want to put it out there. Or, you know, you and I fly those flags. We love horror, and we love, this is what we, you know, this is what we enjoy so much, and so on and so forth. And, you know, we hear people's real haunting stories, and we go to haunted places and all this stuff, and we... You know, we kind of listen through and say that, okay, so we enjoy horror, but we're open about it. Everybody knows that we enjoy horror. That's why we do what we do. But we've talked about that taboo before of where people enjoy horror, but don't necessarily want to say to others that they enjoy horror, maybe because they'll be judged, or maybe because maybe people will think, oh, you're, I don't know, you're a male, you're a female, you're a female especially, you like horror, like, how can you like that, you know, type of thing. Almost like if it's a knock on their femininity, which it absolutely is not.
Right. Oh, that's a good point. Oh, wow. That's a very good point. In fact, you just reminded me of other things. The idea that if we get more emerging identities to embrace it, then, yes, I can be a religious person and still like horror. I can be someone who is definitely pro-animals, but yet I can watch a horror movie that destroys them, right? Or destroys mankind. So I think, like you said, it's true. It's the more that we begin to get these diverse faces and identities in the audience, not just on the silver screen or behind the scenes, but in the audiences watching and discussing them, I think it's moving the envelope further, and it's really embracing and giving horror a new face in the 21st century.
Right. Right. No, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, so many other movies, we already mentioned quite a few, but the 2000 and, the Carrie movie was the one from 2013.
Yes.
It was remade by Kimberly Pierce. And that one was pretty good. I think I preferred the original, but pretty good. And also Jennifer's Body. Jennifer's Body was also... created by a woman. It was done by a woman director, I believe.
Oh, how cool is? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That one makes. That's interesting. I do know Fear Street, which we covered last summer. You know, Nadine turned me on to that, folks. I always have to give props where it's due. I watched the entire series in one day. Okay. And that series one, or part one and two, it was directed by a female director as well. And so I love this because as I begin to see these, you know, we see these identities, folks. It's just great that we're in a time where we can at least respect it and give respect where it is due. And speaking of respect, it is now a good quarter past the hour. And folks, thank you for listening live to our show. If at any time you'd like to chat with us during this incredible dialogue, you may do so at 347. Call us at 347-539-5372. Again, that is 347-539-5372. And you can inbox us with your questions, comments, or requests at everydayfolkslisten@gmail.com, frighttalkguys@gmail.com, frighttalks on Instagram, and NTABSCH on Instagram. Show us your love. So you know that, Dean, we do have a lot of questions. And let's go ahead and jump right on into them.
Yes, we do. Might as well. All right. So we have a question here from Christine. She asks, or states and then asks, so many golden era horror movies were created by Ida Lupino. Wow, it's so cool, especially in a time when women were allowed the same level, I think she meant weren't allowed, the same level or status as men. Did you like The Twilight Zone from the 1950s? She directed it.
Yes, and I think if I'm not, I don't know much about Lupita, but my understanding is that she directed the TV shows, not the movie, but the TV shows, you know, Right. And let me say, I think that was a great example, Christine, the fact that we're bringing in Twilight Zone, because Twilight Zone to me was the game changer for horror, for giving it an identity on public television, because before that, radio played a vital role in scary story hour and storytelling, when folks would come in and they would listen and gather around the radio box to hear things and hear stories and creepy stories and to hear continuations, to tune in for more. Tune in tomorrow at 7 p.m. People actually did that. And so there was this need and this gratification. I got to wait for the next issue, whether it was a book or whether it was on radio.
Right.
And I think it, for her to be able to have done what she did in that time, Lupita to do what she did, kudos to her, because Twilight Zone is more than just being about scary. It's all the other subgenres of horror that are incorporated, especially psychological and thriller. And so I thought it was a great representation. And because of the Golden Age and its, you know, at least in America, its identity of what it represented in America, America was still evolving with its own issues, especially when it came to women's rights and civil rights and things like that. So it was nice to see that a woman could get that opportunity in such a unique time of America.
That's an excellent point. I mean, trendsetters, that's what we're talking about. They're trendsetters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in Twilight Zone of the 50s, the show, I loved the Twilight Zone, the original show. There was something about the black and white that I found significantly scarier than the newer show. Even the, you know, the music that went along with it, the intro's voice. I mean, it was just fantastic. As a matter of fact, my favorite episode from Twilight Zone was one about aliens, and I think it was To Serve Man. To Serve Man, and aliens came down, and they had a book that was To Serve Man, and they were saying, you have to come back to our planet, and they were loading people up. And then they realized, the humans realized, that To Serve Man is a cookbook. So these aliens were taking these the people on the ship, and they were taking them to the planet, and then so that they can eat them. But that was such a, like, I think that show was one of the things that piqued my interest so much in horror, because it was just, it was so cool and unlike anything else when I saw it. And I didn't see it in the 50s when it came out. I didn't see it until probably the 80s, right? Late 80s. But I remember enjoying it quite a bit.
The classic thematic use of black and white. Like you said, Nadine, I'm much appreciative of that. In fact, when we watched Fear Street Part 3, it started that way, I believe. Wasn't it in black and white? And then it began to have color once it started to connect back. I thought it was so cool. And so thank you, Christine, because, you know, whether it be in color or black and white, I just want a good storyline. And I thank you for recognizing Lupita and her incredible contribution. Very cool. So, Nadim, I got one for you. And Mex is no stranger here. So
hey, everybody, Mex.
Shout out to Mex. A lot of slashers were created by women. Nadine, do you think female directors and producers will start to remix the tropes in horror?
I hope so. I hope so.
That's a very tough one.
Why not? I'm wondering if, you know, women have, and I'm saying this as a man, women have a unique perspective that men do not have. They just do. And so I would love to see what a gnarly, my idea of a gnarly wolf creature would look like if created by a woman. Would it be more aggressive? Would it be bigger? Would they be sleeker? I don't know. And I think it's great to, and then also the mixing, right, of the different horror monsters and demons that we know of. I think it's fantastic. And do I think the female directors and producers will? I hope they do. I don't know if they will. Because a lot of times, folks, you got to remember that people are trying to set their own way in genres, and they don't want to copy something that was already done. They want to do their own thing, and they want to start with their own thing. And you could remix and you know, take something from here and take something from there and put it together and make it your own. But, I would be very interested to see definitely a mix within the horror genre of the different characters that we already know, but from the perspective of a woman director. Because I'm going to be honest with you, there's a lot of films and movies that were directed by women
that are significantly scarier than anything men's ever directed. So, you know, in my opinion. What do you think about Mike's idea here?
That's a very good question. I'll say this. If I take one of the most popular tropes in horror, the final girl, right? That's seen in Freddy, that's seen in Halloween. So what if we take the final girl, and this is what I'm saying, I'm answering Max's question in terms of the remix.
Yeah.
Taking the final girl and placing it in space. Let's use that as an example. Placing it in a futuristic dystopian world where the final girl has to fight. Or maybe she's the final girl, happens to be a witch who now has to fight a vampire.
Okay.
In the dystopian world. So there is a cool remix, and I'm wondering, it's when we do those kind of things, when we go to dystopia, we make it more sci-fi. But then who says the rules can't be? There are horror works and writings that are out there where folks are skewing the lines more between sci-fi and horror, right? And so I'm wondering if this is an opportunity to do that. And I feel that because I feel that when it comes to directorship, And this is not in no way, folks, I am not being stereotypical and being any sexist in any way what I'm about to say. But I do feel that there's a certain level of detail that a woman has when it comes to human nature and understanding the human mind in ways that are quite fascinating. And I see that manifest through my colleagues who are medical practitioners and educators alike. It's always this perspective that I hear, and I'm like, wow. I'm saying it, because I'm a man, but I'm also thinking, wait a minute. She's bringing another universal appeal of emotional and identity, psychological identity that I did not see. And now we're beginning to see that manifest in some of the films. So to create the storyline is great, but to give depth to the characters is another. And that requires detail. And I feel that women are very good at detail-oriented connections and identities when it comes to the creative process or even everyday things that we do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, and I think that the eye for detail. I absolutely agree with you. And also, it would take away some sloppiness that sometimes we see in some horror movies directed by men. There are some sloppiness going on, some scenes not as clear cut or not as clean as they should be, you know? Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I have a question here for you from John. John says, I'm going to catch the show after the fact. Hey, John, we're glad you're listening, and we are mentioning you. But here's my question. Where do you see gay and trans directors in the horror industry?
Ooh, John, that's a good question. John, I think what we're seeing, if we get more representation of everybody who looks and feels and thinks whatever they feel, then we will look beyond these gender barriers, these identity barriers, and just concentrate on the work. So I would say in this particular regard, there are many novels and works that are out there that obviously are, you know, especially for gay and trans, that are now beginning, that are indie-based, that are ripe. And I'm not talking just films. I'm also talking about comic books. I'm talking about novels. And it doesn't impress me or it doesn't matter to me if what that person's identity is. It just matters if the content is good and it resonates with me. So I would say, John, as we're moving forward, I think it's nice when we get those other pieces, because once we start learning and loving a franchise, we start wanting to know who did it. And then we start learning, I think the bells and whistles that just make us appreciate it more because we like what we saw initially and not for the name that was behind it. You know what I mean? And I think that's becoming more popular because as times move on, you get fewer. The common names of horror are now becoming many. They're more than just a king, right? It's more than just a Wes Craven. We have other faces and identities, and I like that. I like knowing and learning at the end.
Yeah, and John, for me, so here's what I'm going to say. And it echoes a lot of Billy's sentiment. When I watch a movie, whether it's horror or otherwise, when I read a book, whether it's horror or otherwise, I don't care about the identity or how the person identifies or what the person, I don't care about their gender. That doesn't matter to me. Today in this show, we're celebrating women in horror because women have been a staple in horror and have been in the background for a very long time, and we feel that they don't get the recognition that they deserve. But to be honest with you, we don't go into a movie thinking, well, what's this person's gender or sexual orientation or religious beliefs even. And so I hope that the film industry and horror is open for anybody, no matter what their gender is.
Mm. I love
that. And that is the hope. That's what I want, right? Because to me, if you have, like Billy said, if you have a good idea, if you have a great story, well, that's what I want to see. I want to see the good idea. I want to see the great story. I care about the mind it came from, not really much mm-hmm. anything else.
And John, I hope that was what you were looking for from us, because I feel that's probably where you probably asked it. So thank you for your thoughts. All right, Nadeem, I got a couple questions came in. So when we posted this particular promo for this show, we asked folks on our Instagram and social media and Facebook feeds, which of the featured scary movies on the flyer is their least or most favorite? So some of the comments that came in included Yordanka's American Psycho, favorite. Priscilla, Fear Street, absolute favorite.
Yes.
And then Mahalia says, hey, I don't do scary movies.
Well, Mahalia, then what are you doing with your life? You gotta watch some of these scary movies or shows.
Mahalia, just turn on the TV. There's your horror there. So thank you all for your love and support on our feeds, and continue to send your comments all the same.
And I'm going to go to our next question here, Billy, and this is from, let's get one from the top here. This is from Todd. Todd mm-hmm. says, check out Tales from Halloween. It's a good series of scary stories. I discovered it as a book last October and didn't realize it was a movie until recently. Why have I heard, Tales of Halloween sounds familiar. I think I've seen it. Does it have a sequel maybe?
I'm not sure if it does, but I will tell you it has a very unforgettable cover because it looks like a big moon, a full moon is on it. There's a lot of oranges and blacks because
with
of the Halloween
tree.
Color. There's a tree
like
that's
a tree,
like breaking.
Like
absolutely, right. And
yeah.
There are tales. They're on Netflix. There are some tales of Halloween. There's different little vignettes of tales. I caught maybe one or two. I haven't finished watching it, Todd. But I will tell you that it's pretty cool that I'm – you know what's happening, Nadine. Yes, I still want a good movie and a good movie with rich content. But why am I also, when it comes to horror, like Creepshow, we talked about this in the past
yes.
couple of years, and now Tales from Horror, you know, Tales from Halloween, you got Tales from the Hood, you have the Tales from the Crypt, you know, Creepshow. There are all these little vignettes of stories that also give us a little taste of horror. And I think that makes sense, and I'll tell you why. I think that's possible because people, maybe it's enough to get to whet the appetite of folks who are not as committed like you and I are.
Right.
You know, it's like, I can do this for 30 minutes, and then I'm done. You know, like,
yeah.
oh, well,
yeah.
this is not going to look as scary, so I'll try it. So I would bear to wager that there's a greater audience of folks who might be okay with vignettes versus the full-scale movie cinema.
Yeah, and that makes sense. You know, when somebody just wants tidbits of it, like just to say, oh, well, I did and I watched, but, you know,
right.
not fully committed, I'll put it that way.
Right.
Not fully committed to it. And, you
yeah.
know, the truth is, look, if you're watching a good horror movie, a good horror series, you're not going to fall asleep no matter how tired you are.
There's some good shorts online, right, Nadine? We've done
there
it.
There is.
There's some
there
really
is.
Good
well,
shorts,
oh,
folks.
God.
You know, so well, you know, don't sleep
it?
On
wasn't,
it.
Wasn't La Llorona. What was it?
What was it, that film we saw for the horror fest that was online?
Last year?
The doll and the old lady. Was it a doll or the old lady? It was a Mexican film.
Yes, it was. Oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
it wasn't La Llorona.
Yes, yes.
Was it?
No, it wasn't La Llorona, I don't think. But it was something. I remember when we had this conversation last year. I remember what you're talking about. And I love that because we talked about that extensively and how –
right.
I think we had a conversation about that, and it came up again during Hispanic Heritage Month when we were
right.
talking about the whole identity of what having, you know, horror as it identifies with Latin culture as well. So I remember what you were saying, but there were a couple examples, I guess, that are clouding my mind, but I know where you're going. But Todd, thank you for that. I mean, you just gave us the encouragement to check out more, so we shall. So, hey,
yeah.
Nadeem, I got one for you. Franklin says, this was a cool topic to cover. Thanks for posting. What topics haven't you guys covered yet? You seem to be keep pushing good content out. Keep it coming.
Well, thank you so much, Franklin. I appreciate that. We appreciate that. Billy, we have a lot of topics on hand.
Let's hit it.
Well, we still the historical presidents, the haunting of the presidents. So there's that one. We've discussed dedicating an episode to Bigfoot and Sasquatch, which we haven't completely hit up Bigfoot or Sasquatch yet. Mythological features. I think we did, you know, Billy, we've done so many. I think we're approaching 40 episodes. I don't remember all of them. I know we have the list going for our next shows for months down the line. But we have a lot of good stuff. And you know, Billy, and I'm crediting Billy here. Billy, you know, came up with a lot of these, the topic for this show, the topic for last show. These are Billy's brainchild. And so I know that his thought process is, well, let's push out something that other people are not doing. Right? So something to enjoy, as in the topic of horror and thrills, but knowing that another podcast is not covering something similar. And I think that when people want a little dose of something different and something that just does more than just scratch the surface, that's why they tune into us, and that's why our audience is so great.
And Franklin, Nadim is not giving himself the credit he deserves either. When these ideas are collectively created, and when we do this, we could even be during our weekday, and we're sending each other memes and nonsense whenever we can. Hey, did you see this? Oh, that'd be a great topic. Like, we're just being this, you know, just brothers, being silly. But our best content comes in the most inopportune times. And so thank you for your feedback and giving us that kind of love, and do continue to share, you know, what we're doing here. We're just trying to give a unique and compelling aspect, if not a scholarly aspect, to horror. And so we thank you so much for seeing that and believing in what we do.
I have a question here for you, Billy, from Bella.
Okay.
Bella says, I'm an aspiring horror film producer. All right, fantastic. And yes, I identify as a woman. The industry is still male-dominated, but we're taking a stand. What advice can you offer me as I start this director's journey into horror filmmaking? Great question, Bella.
It is a good question, Bella, because I should be practicing what I'm about to preach. So I will say the first thing to do, Bella, is first, try not to be influenced. Don't let your creative voice be influenced by what others are doing. I get it. You need something to aspire to. We want to be the next Acosta, the next Lupina, et cetera. But be you. Have a really good story or in content that really represents the identity of brand that you want to put in the game. So stay you. Be you. And the other advice I just offer, and this is just brief, is to continue to learn and explore. Make sure that you're in another community of other creatives. You know, I have the fortune and pleasure of having Nadine here and being a part of other groups and horror conversations on social media feeds, fan pages, listening to other podcasts, inviting and conversing with those other creatives. It's important to stay in a community of familiarity, because not only do you connect, but you also learn by being with your own kind. So those are two takeaways of all. Please consider those.
Yeah, and Bella, first of all, kudos to you. I always love hearing about different creatives and people that are starting a new journey, and I think that's absolutely fantastic. One of the sentiments I'm going to echo is be your authentic self. Just be true to your ideas and to the outcomes that you want to see put on film or on paper, whatever the case is. And so that's definitely thing one. And thing two, Bella, I have this theory that everybody who's successful has had to face rejection at some point. Billy has faced it in his creatives. I've faced it in my creatives. People who will tell you that what you're doing, that others are not going to like it, and then you turn around like Billy and sell a million books. Or you turn around like me and you sell paintings around the world. So honestly, Bella, anybody that comes along and rejects your ideas and you know they're solid and you stand behind them, then the hell with them and you keep doing you and pushing forward. But don't let a rejection from some stop you from your goal.
Mm. Bella, you got our support, so keep us posted on your work. And Nadine Smithson wants to know, I did some research and didn't know that women had directed and produced so many good horror films. Thanks for the show. Do you anticipate more horror films from women of color?
Well, I don't know if I anticipate more. I would certainly like to see more women of color producing and directing horror films if that's what they want to do.
Right.
Right. Because maybe they want to produce a film that's not horror, but I would love for that to happen. You know, we talked in the last show or the show before, we talked about Peele, you know, and Peele has been hitting the horror movie genre and has been doing an amazing job at it. But, you know, I think he's getting a lot of attention, and there's room in the industry. So I certainly hope so. And you know what? You could do originals. You know, we're not crazy fans of remakes, but you could do it. And there's so many stories out there that are still untold that I believe women of color can tell that story. And I believe women in general of any color can tell that story. So I certainly would hope that if that's something that there are women of color that are interested in, I definitely hope they're given the opportunity.
Yeah. Consider this. It's a very good point. Consider this, though, and this is to our listener. Think about all the types of shorts that people are already releasing on social media. Like, yeah. I like to follow on Instagram Velvet Horror, and I'm like, I don't know why, I don't know how this individual creates the incredible shorts that are not even 10 seconds long of video content that are so creepy and cool, and they're based in reality. And it's like, oh, my gosh, this is so cool. So those are now films, folks, and folks and these are created by all kind of creators, including women. And so as a result, I'm thinking that the more that we start to identify that a good horror film doesn't have, it could be 10 seconds, it could be 2 hours, it could be 150 pages or 500. So now we're redefining the volume of what that looks like. And I think the sky's the limit. The sky is the limit.
Yep. We have a question here for you from Dina. All right, Dina. Dina asks, I'm looking for something super cool and creepy for the next female directors. Is there a film you'd like to see a female director redo that's already been made, such as a classic?
Ooh, okay. So so what do you think on this, Nadine? All right, I want to get away from slasher and go into supernatural.
Okay.
Or just weird. Like,
okay.
So if I took a movie such as Evil Dead,
okay,
and gave it a more modern twist with a female protagonist, a badass female protagonist. You know, I'm just going to stop there. I think that's where Dina's question is going. So that's one. And the other one I would say, Freddy Krueger, why change it, right?
Right.
I'm not
right.
saying that we need to recast Freddy as a female. That's not what I'm saying here. But what if we got some backstory or prequel that really helped understand the darkness of him and even make us hate him more, not love him, but hate him? Because at the end of the day, he wanted to kill children, folks. So
right.
if we further that, and I'm always wondering, maybe people don't want to go there because we know what that may do as far as societal impact or discovery when it comes to that. Freddy himself already represents a dark aspect of humanity, right, that we
yeah.
deal with in world. But I'm wondering if there are places like that where we can go. And I'm thinking, like, we saw at Candyman. Candyman brought in a social justice aspect. Okay, that was cool. But can we push the envelope further is the question for Dina. And Dina, your guess is as good as mine, at least.
All right. So I'm gonna get away from slasher.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get away from supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go into the realm of Disturbing. I would like to see Misery directed by a female director.
Ooh.
I would like to see a female's perspective on Misery.
That is a very good idea. That's a very good one. I love it because I think Disturbed, you know, that's why I called it weird earlier too. It's like Disturbia.
Right. Disturbia.
You know, like, it's like, that's a very great place. And kind of that's where Peele is.
Yeah.
It's like Thriller meets Super. I don't even know what to call it. Like, I don't even know what to call it. And you know what? I love it. I love not having an identity for this trope. We just call it the 21st century trope of horror. So
that works.
It'll work. And folks, we just realized we have 15 minutes left. So if you want to get in with any questions, feel free to hit us 347-539-5372. Again, that number is 347-539-5372. And you can inbox us now or after at everydayfolkslisten@gmail.com or frighttalkguys@gmail.com or frighttalkguys on Instagram or NTBACH on Instagram as well. So, folks, we're going to do our best to try to knock this out. So, Nadeem, I got one for you from Stinson. Amy Jones directed The Relic. What a classic. Did you guys like it?
Yes, but I saw it such a long time ago that I don't remember much of it. Also, yeah. I don't know why I'm always mixing up in my brain The Relic with Mimic.
Yes, I was going to say that. I thought The Relic was The Mimic, and I'll be honest, I may have seen – it's one of the movies I've not seen, actually, now that I think about it. Or maybe I have. I just don't remember the story.
I just don't remember it, yeah. But you know what? This is one of the beautiful parts of this show, Billy, that we enjoy horror so much and we've seen so much of it that we don't even remember some of that. And then somebody, one of our listeners will come and say, hey, do you remember this or have you seen this? And it's like, oh, no, but you know what? I'm going to watch it right now.
Yeah.
And you know, it opens us back up to something that we watched or may not have watched. And so, Stenson, sorry we can't be much help, but I'll tell you what. We're going to try to watch it, and we will mention it in another show. But the fact that Amy Jones, which is a female, directed it, and it is a classic, that actually speaks volumes for her work as a director in horror.
You know, Nadeem, this question came in from Red Rum.
Red Rum, okay.
Is that a palindrome for murder backwards? I think you guys covered Candyman a few episodes ago. Do you like the modern day version or the original? Another great movie directed by a woman.
I like the actor in the original.
I do too.
I like the storyline a little better of the new one, but I like the actor of the original better. Does that make sense? If I could grab the original with the new storyline, it'd be golden. What about you, Billy?
Agreed. I feel that the new storyline made sense. It's relevant because I don't remember the original storyline. We talked about this before. And so I will say, though, it's interesting because it's almost like Candyman is like this very dark love story, but to whom or what it loves, it more protects. So this new storyline gave it a new identity, a supernatural, you know, like almost like superhero-like in a way. It's like right. Horror superhero in a way that we've not seen with other supernatural movies, because usually the dark force is just a bad dark force. You might have a few nice ghosts that want to help you along the way, but the entity is still imminent. Whereas in this movie, it actually, and I'm not trying to give a spoiler here, folks, the modern version just made it more relatable. And hopefully given redemption to circumstances where people never got justice. I think that's a good way of leaving it.
Yeah.
Leaving it there.
Billy, have a question here from Peter. Okay. Peter asks, Fear Street 1984, all the parts is great. I didn't know it was directed by a woman. Nice to see women paving the way in horror.
Got it, Peter. Peter, there it is. In fact, I want to see more like that. In fact, I haven't been on Netflix in a while, Nadeem. Have you? I haven't had time to really explore what's in the horror category or even on Shudder yet. I get the pushes that come out, like what's released and new releases, but I really haven't had a chance to explore. And I'm really hoping for more things that give us a throwback of the 80s, like we did from Fear Street and then how it just looped its way back. So thank you, Peter, for saying that.
I feel like asking, what's television? Because we've been so busy that we haven't had the opportunity to watch anything. Okay, but I do want to say this. Fear Street, all of them, and 1984, they were amazing. I loved the cinematography. I loved the colors, that retro 80s vibe. I enjoyed it so much. I think they did an excellent job with Fear Street. I was a fan of the books. I am definitely a fan of the show, and I just think it was absolutely phenomenal. Now, what I will tell you, Billy, is I believe that soon, well, this year, the next season of Stranger Things is supposed to drop.
Yes.
So definitely looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. And it's thank you for Peter for recognizing the greatness of Fear Street. But definitely, Dean turned me on to that a year ago, and I'm very happy he did.
Yeah, we had a whole show dedicated to it.
Yes, we did. We had a lot of good footage, like you know, feedback, like what we're getting now. In fact, Nadine Gladys asked, I appreciate that you guys are celebrating women who have worked hard in horror. Good job. Were you surprised to see that some of your favorite films were created by women?
I think that, Gladys, thank you for your question. I think that was what I was surprised the most about out of the, I was surprised about Buffy. I was really surprised about Buffy being created, the show itself, created or directed, rather, by a woman, only because I felt that it was, there were times where in the show, from what and I haven't seen the show in a while now, but there was times that I'm remembering in the show where it was kind of like men would get the upper hand, you know, the Angel and the Spike that were in the story. But then I think to myself, you know what? It had to be a great way. I mean, there's this director, and what she did was she made this badass character that's just can combat any type of demon or monster, and they have this wonderful library they're working with. So I was definitely surprised by Buffy, not because it was a woman that created it, just simply because I didn't know.
That's a good point. That's true. And again, it came at a time when female empowerment, and the changing millennium, you know, that also played a vital role in all this too. It is almost like it encapsulated everything else that happened before, and that's in at least this past millennium for women. It kind of like manifested into Buffy to give women a new identity as we tread forward into another century, you know? And so I thought it was super cool to have that. So Nadine, Craig wants to know very briefly, who doesn't like The Babadook? That movie is creepy. Plays off the Boogeyman saga. What do you guys think?
The Babadook was directed by a female director. It was fantastic. I didn't see it right when it came out. I didn't see it until afterwards. And I think maybe because somebody in one of our earlier episodes had mentioned it. And I thought it was great. I think that boogeyman theme is not explored enough in horror movies, believe it or not. That's my opinion. So I thought it was a great spin and a great take on it. And it was super creepy. Super
yeah,
creepy. The cover is creepy. What do you think about it, Billy? Did you enjoy it?
Loved it. I enjoyed it. It was a fun watch. Fun, you know, playing off of a lot of our childhood fears and a parent's fears for their child, you know, fighting for their child, you know, the defenseless innocent, right? So I thought it was a cool movie that played into a lot of those sub-genres of psychological understanding. Yep.
We have one more question here from Mako. Mako says, asks, I love the movie American Psycho. There's much to appreciate about it. This crazy guy murders women, yet it was directed by a woman. What do you think it all means? This is like a meaning of life question, Billy. What do you think it all means?
I think, well, it's hard to try to read deeply into it because the female directors creating it were creating and competing in a time when women weren't having the same, you know, opportunity. However, what it does do for me, if I want to look at it from a psychoanalytical standpoint, I just feel that women sometimes, just like anyone else, but women can be allured by very charming, you know, people, especially men in this case, because it played off of that heterosexual identity, and they could become victimized. And you got to be careful. But we're seeing that flip. And it goes back to the question earlier, Nadine, that came up by someone. If we wanted, you hear the stories we hear about the Hard Rock and women are being lured by these men are being lured by these nice, attractive women. They take them back to their rooms and they wake up in the morning, they're robbed. So I'm always wondering if that's another trope or an opportunity there. When women have the authority, it's like femme fatale meets crazy psycho woman. But the only difference, she's not murdering him, but she's taking advantage of him in a way that hurts him or impacts him. So I just feel that what it all means, it means that maybe women are no longer tired of being the final girl or the victim. Maybe they want to do some other things and disturb us a little bit more. Maybe they want to be misunderstood and that be okay and the world accept her for that. I think that's where we're going.
Yeah, and, you know, The American Psycho is a great film. It's just out there, which is what makes it a great horror flick. It's just kind of out there. And really, you garner an appreciation because this is somebody who's highlighting the fact She's highlighting, like you said earlier, a lot of things, corporate America, metropolitan area, slasher psycho. I mean, it's a lot of things in that movie. And to be able to blend it together in the way that they did and just make it, it was kind of seamless, to be honest with you, for a horror movie. So I think that was absolutely fantastic. I mean, really, if you like horror, what's not to like about American Psycho?
And, Nadine, we have to say thank you to all these amazing listeners, supporters, comments. Thank you for the love you continue to give us here at Everyday Folks in Fright Talk. We have more coming for you, folks. March 18th, which is 2 weeks from today, we're going to have a special time show at 6 p.m. where we're going to be giving a tribute to female screen queens. So we hope that you'll be able to share your love and your appreciation there. So look out for our promo, because our promos, people have been commenting that our promos have been, you know, grabbing them, and they stay in the subliminal of their minds, the subconscious.
Right.
And that's good. It's almost like we're creating our own digital horror story through our post.
Absolutely.
But thank you all for listening. Any final words for Nadine?
Well, just echoing your thoughts, Billy, we appreciate all of our listeners and all the love that we get and reaching out. And folks, I'm going to remind you, like I always do, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Play, we're on iTunes. And if you've only heard a couple of our shows and you liked it, well, guess what? Lucky you. You have more than 24 hours of horror that you can listen to with the Fright Talk, guys. So go back, check out the downloads, check out, they're there, they're on Spotify, all the ones that we've done before, and they're on iTunes. And so download it, play it while you go on your walk, before you light your sage. We just appreciate all our listeners and send you a lot of love.
Take care, everyone. Until our next episode, stay safe.